I guess it's time to start. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Thank you for attending my talk. This is how to become your own ISP. First, the boring bits. Who am I? I am a NOC engineer at SpeakUp. Nick Bauhaus is my name, by the way, which I guess you already knew that. At SpeakUp, SpeakUp is a voice over IP provider, so I do phone network stuff and IP networking stuff. On the side, I'm also an entrepreneur. So before I worked at SpeakUp, I had a little side business that helps other entrepreneurs from the area I'm from, Twente, mostly, with small-scale hosting or other IT needs. I'm also an NLNOG board member. NLNOG is a stichting that I'm going to talk about later. And I'm a member of Coloclue. More about them later as well. And I got an interesting email a couple of months ago from Cogents, and they called me an internet god and network supreme ruler. I really like that title, so I'm going to stick with it. I did not make this up, by the way. This is a real email I got from someone at Cogents. And the subject line, it says... I don't know where they got that, but oh well. So before we can start our own ISP, it's important to know how the internet actually works. You may already have some understanding of it, but the gist of it is it's a bunch of networks. And all these networks are interconnected to each other. That's the one-liner explainer of how the internet works. So what does this look like? In our example, we have Bob here, and Bob wants to go to YouTube. So Bob has a connection to one of the evil operators here in the Netherlands called KPN. KPN has a connection to Google, and Google has the servers that the video that Bob wants to watch is hosted on. But underneath all of this is not just the names KPN and Google, but it's actually AS numbers. These AS numbers are used to identify unique networks on the internet. So it actually looks like this. So Bob does a request. Okay, Bob's Xperia box or router in his cupboard routes that request to the KPN core. KPN has a connection to Google, gives the Google those packets, that connection, and then Google knows where the video is. If you wanted to map the internet, it would look something like this. We have all these little numbers that each represent their own network interconnected to each other. And this looks very, not a good overview, I'd say. And this is also not complete. The internet is far too large for that. What you can do, however, is do a traceroute on your computer. You may already have done that in the past. And here I have done a traceroute from the node in my own network to hackerhotel.nl. And you can very easily see that that request was routed directly from my network to Hetzner, because we are interconnected. So we know that hackerhotel.nl is hosted at Hetzner. But if we, for example, try to reach a host that is on the other side of the world, the traceroute looks a little bit different, right? We have all these different networks in between. So you can see that it starts with my AS number at the top. Then it goes to a transit provider. I'll explain to you what that is in a second. Then it goes to another transit provider, and then another transit provider, and then eventually it reaches the host in this case, Australia. So you see this example, you know that these two are connected to each other, but how is that actually done? Like, this is all magic. It's done for me. It's all happening behind the curtains. Eventually, these networks are connected by, well, cables. There's this guy again. These cables look like this, mostly fiber optic cables. There may be some other means used here and there. Mostly it's this stuff nowadays. And they're connected in data centers, mostly. And if two networks have data centers in common, they have different means of connecting to each other. One of them is using internet exchanges. So say your network and my network are both present in a data center in Amsterdam called NICEF. We can arrange to put a cable in that data center from my rack to your rack, connect them to our routers, do a little configuring on our routers, do that by static routes, but I'd recommend another means. And then we're connected. My router knows how to use your how to reach your network, and your router knows how to reach my network. So we can exchange traffic. That's a very cheap solution. But what if you want to exchange traffic with not just me, but a whole host of other parties that is also present in that data center? Or maybe even networks that are outside that data center. Well, there are platforms like AmZX and FreeCX. You may have heard about those in the past. And these, what they basically do is rack a switch, like a regular Ethernet switch, in one of these racks in those data centers. And then everyone can arrange for a cable to relay to that rack and be instantly connected to every other provider that is also connected to one of those internet exchanges. AmZX asks for a port fee every month, depending on your port speed or how many connections you have. FreeCX currently is free, so also the most fun provider. They host barbecues and stuff. So I recommend it. But you cannot connect to every network via an internet exchange, right? You can only reach the parties that are connected to that internet exchange. So you need something else. And that is called a transit provider. These are some examples, and those in the know can see that I've done something to the Cogent logo there. These transit providers are like ISPs for your ISP. They promise to reach the entire internet. But the downside is that they charge money for that service. That money is how much you have to pay is usually calculated by the 95th percentile of the traffic you use. So say you normally only push 10 megabits of traffic, then you pay for those 10 megabits. But if there's only small spikes of 1 gigabit and the rest of the time it's traffic levels are very low, you pay a lot less. So it depends on how much traffic you actually push through that pipe. I'm a customer of FuSix, by the way. That's why I say I recommend them. You also saw them in one of the previous screenshots that I posted of the MTR, the trace routes. So I chose Freedom in this example. I explained that when we lay a cable or when we connect to an internet exchange, we can do static routes, and that's all fun. But what if the other party makes a change to their configuration? Maybe they acquired an extra subnet because they're growing. That is where BGP comes in. BGP is the it's often called the duct tape that holds the internet together, but yes, it works pretty well. And BGP works something like this. We have two providers here, Freedom and Google. And Freedom says, hey, I am this AS number, and if you have traffic for this prefix or this range of IP addresses, you can send that to me. Thank you. It goes to the Google router, and Google sends back, that's very cool. If you have traffic for this subnet, this is a well-known subnet they have, one of the subnets they have, you can send that to me. And that goes in there. It can also work like this. So here I chose my transfer provider FuSix and my own network. And it says, I know how to reach a whole bunch of networks. If you have traffic for them, you can send them to me. That goes in my router, along with that information from Google and all the other networks I'm connected with. It is up to my router to make sense of that all. So that's where your router does its thing and makes sense of it makes up what they call a router table, routing table. So if you see this subnet here, that goes into the routing table of, in this case, Google. And Google's router now knows how to reach that subnet. And it may have different multiple routes to reach that subnet. So if one of those routes goes down, it can take another path. That's just why people say BGP is a duct tape, but it's pretty robust, actually. I'd rather have this than static routes everywhere. Place my animation again. But you might see a problem with this approach, right? If Fusix router just says, yo, what up, and doesn't provide any actual validation of if it can actually reach those subnets, or if it's just pretending to have those subnets, or putting on a mask and saying he is the real source, but is actually not. So we have this thing called... this is an example of a BGP request being hijacked. So a malicious actor could, for example, say, hey, I am Nick Bauhaus now, and I host this subnet. Meaning that the internet traffic goes to a malicious actor instead of my network, which could be bad. I just host some mirrors for open source software, which are validated pretty well, but save your Rabobank, then you might not find this fun. Luckily, there is a solution to this, which is called RPKI ROV, which, well, you go to RIPE NCC or one of the other parties that gives out IP addresses, and you sign a certificate that says this AS number is supposed to announce this prefix. So there's a little more validation as to what AS number should announce what prefixes. And there's a whole bunch of other cryptography and validation going in. But the hardest thing is that every ISP should support RPKI-ROV and validate this. I've implemented this in my network, but for larger networks, it's harder to implement. So this may or may not be something that you want to check when you become a customer of a new ISP. You can use a website called bgp.tools that can relatively accurately check if a network does RPKI-ROV validation. So the website bgp.tools is a really nice website to browse the internet ecosystem, as they say on their homepage. If you go to that website right now, you're connected to the Wi-Fi here, you will see you are connecting from Event Infra. And then you can click on the AS number, and then you get this page. And here you can see the transit providers that Freedom uses. So in this case, Fusix, Asimo, and Fiber Operator. They also have a really nice tool called the Looking Glass, where you can type in an IP address and see all the routes from all the networks that share information with BGP tools to do that subnet. So if you're getting started with your network, you're wondering, can my IP address be reached? You can type it in here, and it will show, or not, the routes that other routers can see from the internet. So if you actually want to do this, where do you get started? You'll need a few things. You'll need a router, some internet resources, and a place to connect to, like one of those data centers, maybe. A router can be this, a nice machine. I guess it works pretty well, even for small networks, could work. I hope you don't pay too much for your electricity. And it also functions as a space heater, so maybe nice in the winter. Also that, yes. Lots of noise. So if you like some white noise while you sleep, it can also be used for that. I bet even that you can pick these up really, really cheaply because big ISPs are trying to get rid of them. I myself use something like this. It's just a standard off-the-shelf server from Dell. You could even do it on a Raspberry Pi, maybe. But if the hardware is too slow, it might have some trouble processing all the internet routes, right? Because you are a router on the internet, and it needs to handle a full table of the internet, which is, I don't know off the top of my head how many routes, but you're not just handling IPv4 routes, you're also handling IPv6 routes. It's a lot, and probably handling multiple of them, and every time you connect to a new transit provider, your CPU gets busier and busier and busier processing. Also, every time a change in the internet happens, which is a lot, your CPU also gets to work by recalculating routes. So, again, choose some nice hardware, but too slow, and you run into some problems. I know MikroTik even makes a router that fits into a PCIe slot. It can actually also act as some SFP Plus interfaces. I have one of those. They're really cheap, but I haven't tested it with a full table or even multiple full tables. So, but that's something you might want to look into because then you have a dedicated router into your server. It's in 1U, that's pretty nice. So you need some numbers. I talked about those. You need an autonomous system number and you need some IP addresses. So ASN, it's pretty cheap relatively. IPv6, there's enough of them, also really cheap. But there's a big problem called IPv4. I don't know how your Spanish is, but this means very expensive. So where can you get these numbers? There's a few organizations in the world that give out these numbers. Their task is to give out these numbers. These are called regional internet registries. You can see from our region, that is the RIPE NCC. But if you're in North America, then you go to ARIN. If you're in Australia or China or India, you go to APNIC. But for us, it's RIPE. You want one of those numbers, you go to their website, you look around, and you find this page. RIPE NCC members pay an annual contribution for 2024, so this is old information. This is 1,550 euros. So, I don't know how big your hobby budget is, but you pay this amount per year at least. I think it increased this year. 2,000 this year, thank you. And then you also pay a one-time fee of 1,000 euros. And then you also pay for the resources that are assigned to you. Luckily, there is an alternative. You can go to what they call a sponsoring leer. So this is a member of RIPE NCC that can help you get these numbers. I am a member of Coloclue. Coloclue is a they call it a networking association, but it's not the scary kind of networking, like talking to people, but it's the actual cool kind of networking with computers and stuff. So they started out when they had a couple of friends that said, I have a bunch of servers in the rack of my employer, but I move employers every 2 years, and now I have to renumber everything. Can we not just put some people together, rent some rack space in a data center somewhere, and do it that way. But that is where Coloclue came up. I am a member, but I don't rack any servers there at the moment. It's just a cool bunch of people. They host barbecues and other kinds of events. And they're also a sponsoring layer. If you're interested about Coloclue or joining them, maybe just contact me or go to their website. My contact details will be on the last slide. So you have some numbers, either from Ripe itself because you have money too much, or from Coloclue, or from some other sponsoring layer. How do you get connected? You have to choose a data center. And there are lots of them in the Netherlands. That's very nice. Netherlands has very good infrastructure, like IP infrastructure. Well, roads are also pretty good, at least the roads I drive. But networking infrastructure is also pretty good. There's lots and lots of data centers. You have to choose, however, the data centers that contain the networks you want to connect to or the internet exchanges you want to connect to. A nice resource to look that up is PairingDB. PairingDB is a, you could call it a catalog of different networks, and they list the kind of network. So this is my network. It says it's educational / research. Traffic levels between 100 and 1,000 megabits a second. And it also lists the public peering exchange points. So these are the internet exchanges that I was talking about. If you are a member of any of these internet exchanges, you can send me an email and we can make our routers talk to each other. But if you're present in the data center Nikkev, Amsterdam, then we could, I'm not saying I want because I don't have enough ports, but we could arrange a cross-connect, so just lay a cable in the data center and exchange traffic directly. So let's zoom in on how I set up my network. My network is not very big. It consists of these things. These three things. That's the entire network. So on top we have two switches from Microtik. In the middle is a the RMK210, which bounces these two together, which means two switches in one U. That's pretty good. And then there's a Dell PowerEdge R630, pretty old machine. Might want to replace that at some point, but it's working well for me so far. So these ports here, this is an older photo, so some of the ports are empty, but are actually connected right now. And I have different connections to SpeedIX and FreeSIX and FuseIX and Encrypted and Net1. Which are either internet exchanges or transit providers. Net1 and Encrypted have provided me transit for free, so I'm very grateful for them. It's working really well. FuseIX I pay a small amount for, but it's not too bad. And then on that server, I run a couple of things. There's this Debian on there. It runs software called BERT, and BERT is the virtual router that that I run. So you could use a physical router for your network, but you could also use Debian with BERT on it. There's also other software like OpenBGPD. As long as it can talk the BGP protocol and handle a good amount of routes, then it works well. I chose BERT because Coloclue uses it. There's some automation software for it that Coloclue already wrote, so I could adapt that for my needs. And it's a very well-known and very popular choice, so there's lots of support, and you have a good chance when you run into a problem and you Google it that you can find an answer. And I also run Libvirt. There's some VMs on there. And what do these VMs do? There's a web server in there that hosts my my personal websites, but I also host Miros for some open source software. So if you use, for example, Arch Linux, Manjaro, MariaDB, Tor, Termux, OpenSense, then you could use my mirror, and I'm pretty well connected, as you could have seen. So you can use it very easily. These get updated every according to the schedule of the project that that I'm running the middle for. So they all have their own guidelines. So at the moment I was taking these screenshots, apparently the Manjaro mirror was syncing. Traffic levels look like this for one day. It's a pretty good amount of traffic. I see a huge spike every time Arch Linux releases a new release. Don't know exactly why, because Arch Linux updates pretty well, I'd say. I've once updated the Arch Linux install that I haven't touched for a year, and it went fine. This is one of the things I do with my network. If you have your own network, then you're also responsible for any abuse that takes place on that network, right? So if you build this network to maybe host services for others, then if others abuse that network for sending spam or hosting things they shouldn't, people of other operators of other networks, or maybe just normal people, need a way to get in touch with you. So if you do a lookup for an IP address, you will always find an abuse email address. Why am I saying this? Well, I tried running a Tor exit node. Yes, this is great fun. So this is my experience with it. I ran it for, I think, 2 months. And I even went to the United States during this period. Didn't really think that through. Went well. Mostly I got these kinds of emails, and everyone that works has worked a ISP abuse desk knows this email very well. It basically means, I saw that you downloaded a TV show or movie, and that is not allowed. Please do not do that. And they provide some details about what was downloaded. For example, here you can see the IP address of the Tor exit node there on the top. And then later you can see content item, and then someone liked to watch Reno 911, I guess. yes, with Russian subtitles or dubbing. Either way, Tor is used for torrenting a whole lot, so I got a bunch of emails. So during those 2 months, I got 161 of those emails. Also got some other emails like, hey, stop port scanning, or stop attacking my WordPress website, or those kinds of stuff. Luckily, nothing too serious. But at some point, I decided all is well, and I shut the exit node down. Now it's just Tor relays, so they sit in the middle of Tor traffic. I still provide some bandwidth for that. So what did this all cost me? This is very hard to outline, because everyone's cost is going to be different, but this might give you some idea. The R630 I bought was back then around 1,100 euros secondhand. I since then upgraded it with more RAM, better CPUs, more disks, so take this with a huge grain of salt. These other costs, the ASN and the IPv6 space, are from the latest Coloclue invoice, and this is what RIPE charges them, so they charge it directly to me without any margins. I then also lease some IPv4 space, because IPv6 isn't implemented by everyone yet. Odido. And for that, I pay less than 1,000 a year. Don't want to disclose the exact amount, but people have told me this is very, very cheap, and I believe them, because I've seen other prices. I don't have that kind of capital sitting around, unfortunately. Yes. I'll come to that in a second. I didn't list the cost of those Microtik switches. Those were, on the top of my head, 200 a piece, so 400 euros for the switches. Sorry? well, yes, I did pretty good. And there's a whole bunch of other costs like Rackspace and power and maybe Code Clue membership, which is last time I checked it was 60 a year. So why do you want to do all this? Right? So it's a huge hassle, costs a lot of money. Why do you even get started? Well, I guess for most of you, I don't have to ask this question because, you know, it's fun. You learn doing BGP by actually doing it, and you make the rules of your own network. So you can say what is allowed and what is not, until the police arrive, of course, which hasn't happened to me. You can help the community, like open source communities, by providing some bandwidth. As I said, Netherlands is pretty well connected, and we have lots of mirrors already. But more is always better. If we can spread the load, then that is very nice. Or maybe you can host a Tor node or a Tor exit node if you feel really brave. And if you want to make a career switch to network specialist, network engineer, NOC engineer, and you already have a network like this, then you get a head start in my book. If you apply to me then, and you show me your own network, then, well, I will be impressed. Some resources if you want to get started with this. NLNOG, I talked about them. NLNOG is a stichting. I don't know the English name for this. Sorry? Foundation, thank you. What they do is they bring network operators from the Netherlands together. And they do that by an IRC channel, a Discord channel. Discord is there because we want to attract a younger audience, but IRC is more active. It's not that the Discord is dead, by the way. There is also a nice group active there. But I guess for this audience, IRC is more appropriate. So you can check out nlnog.net, and there will be details for the IRC channel there. There's also Code Clue. I talked about them. Nice association. You can become a member. Come to the events. They host Code Clue Presents every year, which is basically this. People give talks about interesting topics, maybe something they've built or something they've done. There's also the website bgp.rodeo. When I was looking for a nice domain, I found the tld.rodeo. I chose that as the name for my network. bgp.rodeo contains some blog posts about building my network. And you can also read up about the Tor exit node adventures there. There's also software like GNS3 in Container Lab. So if buying servers and routers and going to a data center or becoming a member of Code Clue is too much for now, you can also just download GNS3 and our Container Lab and get started with BGP and IP routing just on your laptop. There's lots of resources online on how to do that. But GNS3 looks like this. You can build nice virtual infrastructure. If you're from the east of the Netherlands, please get in contact with Tukkelab, because we started a Code Clue-like club there with data center racks in Enschede, with connections to NICEF Amsterdam. So you can. That's a nice starting point as well. There's a nice club of people that are already starting there, because I already have infrastructure in other data centers. I'm not present there yet, but I will be sometime in the future. And you can get transferred for me if you want. Container Lab looks like this, by the way. This is a Visual Studio Code extension that you can load and make these kind of nice graphs and networks within Visual Studio Code. So Container Lab is more writing YAML files and works with Docker containers. GNS3 works with virtual machines of virtual routers and stuff. So I hope that I've given you enough information to also become an internet god and network supreme ruler. And I'd like to thank you very much for attending my talk. And if there's any questions, please ask them now. Thank you. Yeah, the question was if I also knew BGP.tools. It was one of the slides, or actually multiple slides that I had in my presentation. No, BGP.tools is a nice way to browse the internet. So. Good question. So the question was, how would I go about getting a connection to somewhere that is not a data center? For example, your home, right? There's multiple options. There are providers that provide a connection to your home from the data center. A company like Eurofiber can arrange that for you. For hobby, it's very costly. It exceeds the hobby budget. Very much. You should think about like for. Well, there you go. Eurofiber. You need to think about 300-400 euros a month, and then you're lucky. And then it's also with a contract of a minimum of 3 years. If you're a good negotiator, then I guess you can get better prices. There's also an alternative. You can do a connection over the connection of your current ISP. So for me, that is Freedom. I have a pairing session with Freedom in over the Fries IX. And you can lay a tunnel over that. And if you choose a GRE tunnel, for example, it's a very low overhead tunnel, not encrypted, but it's internet traffic. It's not encrypted anyway. You can also choose that. You have a little bit of a lower MTU, but you have the experience will be like having your own ISP at home. If you want to use OpenSense for that, then I have some pointers that I can give you to connect those two to each other. I do that myself at home with a small BGP announcement to my router in Amsterdam, and then a GRE over that that tunnel. Volgens mij was er daar nog ergens vraag? Nee? Ja. Ja. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yes, very true. Equinix asks exorbitant amounts of money for cables in the gutter somewhere. Oh God. There's some guidelines that NICAV wants you to follow. But if you follow those guidelines, yes, you can install your own cables, which is yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. On the PCI. No. Oh, okay. Hmm. Maybe not ideal. Yeah. Okay. Those switches I showed in my presentation, they run router OS7 and nothing earlier than router OS7. But I only use them for their layer 2 features, not any layer 3 stuff. I don't trust them for that. Microtik is a vendor for I would say hobbyist network equipment. There's also lots of people that use them in production and swear by them. I've seen some pretty weird bugs also on Twitter with like integers that should keep time rolling over. It's like weird stuff. But the price is good, so for your hobby network, it's allowed to go down, right? And it might be a cool choice. So if you're looking into network vendors, there's Uniper, Cisco, there's lots of them. But look at Microtik if you want to keep the cost down. You had also a question, right? Yeah. Yeah. It depends. So for Freedom, my example, the all connections already go to Amsterdam. So it's like a small extra hop from Freedom to my network. It depends on how those two networks are connected together. It might be very inefficient and might introduce some extra latency. So you have to look at the trace routes of your router and your network, see how that looks like. Is that connection stable, and is this something I want to route everything through, or maybe they have better connections more locally? And GeoRetinal is very low overhead, so that's the reason that it's a very old standard, and it's very low bandwidth. You could also go with something like WireGuard, and that also adds some CPU overhead because it has to encrypt everything. But the advantages for example, event infra is that they can use their own IP addresses. So if I route my own IP address here, I can also use my own IP addresses. So at home, I have a Wi-Fi network. Every device that connects to that network gets its own dedicated IPv4 address. Firewalls, like you should, but it's dedicated IP addresses. So that's nice to have. Yeah, mostly. Yeah, that would be nice. Okay. Yes, you can. The board would really, really, really like you to inform them before you start doing that. But there are Tor exit nodes running in the Kotaklu network already. I'm not sure. I'm not the part of the board there, and I've never tried running a Tor exit node on there. I guess they have some kind of abuse handling system that filters out all the copyright stuff, and I guess it's hard to stop copyright infringements when you run a Tor exit node. You could maybe block BitTorrent traffic, but then, yeah, not a very nice solution, I guess. And Anarcho doesn't have members. It's a foundation, not an association. Yes. Definitely fun.